Thank you very much, Laura. Right, okay, welcome to everyone, welcome to Karen online, and also Councillor Ransom and Councillor Poland and Mr. Henry and Mr. Dibner. We've got Carol up there as well, and also Chris. So there we go, we've got a full house, I think, on screen as well. So look, welcome to everyone. This cabinet on the 9th of June 2022. We are going to be running. This is a bit of a hybrid meeting, so the people I've just mentioned are sitting virtually in front of us at the moment. But we also have a fair number of people in the room as well. So I'm going to start the meeting by saying this meeting will be recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the Council's website. In addition, under the Local Authority Executive Arrangements, Meetings and Council and Access to Information England Regulation 2012, other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any such images or sound recordings is not under the Council's control. So, first off, apologies. Well, we've got Councillor Poland, who's actually on the screen in front of us, who's suffering a little bit at the moment. So, Councillor Poland is with us virtually and will be forming part of the meeting, but because it's virtual, won't be proposing, seconding or voting on any items. Otherwise, we have no other apologies. So, item two, disclosures of pecuniary interests and other registrable and non-registrable interests. Adrian, I'm still not going to get used to this. This is quite annoying. do we have any interest to disclose under item two?
No.
Absolutely none. Okay, thank you very much. So, we now move on to item three, which leads to announcements. I do not have any announcements to make this evening. Item 4, minutes of the previous meeting, that was held on the 7th of April 2022. Is everyone happy that I can sign those off?
Yep.
Yep. Okay, I signed them off. So Laura, I will hand those to you at the end of the meeting. Questions under Cabinet Procedure 10.7, that's item 5. No questions have been submitted. So now on to the meat of the meeting. Item 6, Housing Customer Engagement Strategy 2022-2025. Now we've got Peter Oliver in the room with us, and we've got Councillor Poland who's online. So as usual, we'll take all the reports as read. Councillor Poland, can I ask you if you want to just say a few words to introduce the item, and then we're going to pass over to Peter to see if there are any additional items that he wants to flag with us that may not necessarily be in the report or to highlight in the report before we go on to any discussions or questions. So over to you, Councillor Poland.
Thank you, Leader. So this report then, this report really is about how we engage with our tenants, our customers. Up until 2020, we used a number of methods to engage with our tenants. Then lockdown happened, and like so many other things in the country, it came to a halt. Now we have started to re-engage since last year, but this is really formalising how we do that. And how we move forward in terms of engaging with our customers and getting the feedback from them. It's a very important report in some ways, because I believe the engagement that we have with tenants is vital in terms of understanding what they want and then being able to communicate with us. And having that sort of the ability to feel like they're being heard, I think is very important to having good relationship and being a good landlord for our tenants. So there are a number of priority areas that the report covers. The first priority is how to make it easier for our customers to engage in ways that should interest them. So that's to review the structures of engagement and opportunities, and also to provide ways for customers to ask questions and give feedback and access to information, for example, on their phones, tablets, computers, which is something that's been highlighted to us in a recent survey as being something that could potentially be a way of engaging people who work or maybe find it less convenient to use traditional methods to get to customers. The second priority is to be more accountable for the services we deliver. So this is to consult our customers on the timely information they want from us, how often, and how they'd like to present it. It's also to empower customers to hold us to account by providing information, training, support, developing a resident scrutiny process that will change our housing service and commit providing feedback to response to us. So that's things like the HMAB, which actually was one of the engagement processes that continued all the way through lockdown. But there are all the resident forums as well, and that's very much theirs. Third priority is to use customer feedback to improve our housing services and increase value for money. And that's going to include things like gathering feedback from customers, using it to understand service weaknesses, identify good practice, and provide transparency. It will also produce a regular, you said we did, article for Your Homes Matter magazine. Again, just highlighting how we responded to the feedback they've given us so that we're not just ignoring it. And the final priority four, to embed customer engagement in all our services. So again, that's really from our side of things, making sort of everyone understand that their first point of engagement with the tenant is makes them customer service isn't just a department, it's something we all do every day. And that's pretty well what this report's about.
Okay, thank you very much, Councillor Poland. Peter, is there anything more to add to James's brief introduction? Thank you very much. Right. Okay, look, thank you very much for that. So, are there any questions or points that anyone wishes to raise?
So, I think it's a very welcome report, to be perfectly honest. I think it's really nice to see we're engaged with our residents and it's supported, you know, by and endorsed by HMAB. That's really good to see.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I mean, look, it is, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's a great report. HMAB's involvement absolutely critical, and it's great to, you know, initiate a plan for how we're going to interact with our tenants. I mean, we've got a large number of them. It's important that we communicate with them in a way that is good for them, but also useful for us to be able to respond. Okay. Any other points?
No.
Any other points anyone wants to raise? Okay. Okay. So if we've got no other points, Councillor Poland, you can't make a recommendation, as I think you correctly pointed out earlier on. So Councillor Barclay is going to make a recommendation, and then we'll come to a second.
So recommendation of the Housing Customer Engagement Strategy 22-25 attached appendix 1 be approved, that delegated authority be given to the Head of Landlord Services in consultation with the lead member for Vic Housing to make minor amendments to the Housing Customer Engagement Strategy 22-25 for the reasons given 1 and 2 on page 10.
Thank you very much. Councillor Harper-Davis,
and I'm very happy to second.
Are you sure you don't want to read out the whole recommendation? Yeah, okay. Right, look, thank you very much, Peter, and your team. I mean, it is a great document. I know James, likewise. Okay. So, thank you very much. It is a great report. It's good that we've got a chance to vote on it. So we're now going to go to voting. So, all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. So, that's approved. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Peter. So, we're on to item 7, which is taking the common ground on housing and employment land needs. So we have Rich Benning, who's here in the room. We've got Carol, who's our group leader, plans, policies, and places online. There we go. Miraculously appeared on screen. Good evening, Carol. And so, also, I'm going to go now to Councillor Bailey, who's going to say a few words of introduction before we then pass over to Rich and Carol for any additional points.
Thank you very much, leader. So the report seeks to have Cabinet's approval for us to be a signatory on the Statement of Common Ground. The Statement of Common Ground sets out the strategic position for Leicester and Leicestershire, and also shows that we work collaboratively with our neighbours. It came before a members' advisory group, which is obviously made up of all those partner councils in April. Most importantly, though, it is part of the statutory process for us to get our plan over the line, and without it, it could hamper things a little bit. This Statement of Common Ground also looks at Leicester's unmet need, and it's therefore redistribution of its unmet need moving forward. We have agreed as part of that savings of common ground to take an additional 78 units per annum. More importantly though, we think we can do that within our existing site allocation, so that we won't need any additional sites throughout that process. We have run the numbers in various different connotations and feel that it works perfectly well, and the inspectorate will be happy with that. We are also taking all of Leicester City's employment unmet need. Again, we can do that within the allocation that we already have set out in our existing plan. So again, there's no additional sites needed. We had in our existing, or in our emerging plan, should I say, an oversupply of employment need, so that we can also absorb that within the statement of common ground and the unmet need made by Leicester.
Thank you very much. Okay, Richard and Carol, are there any other additional points that you want to draw out of the report?
Yes, thank you, Leader, and through you. There is a supplementary report with this item, and an additional recommendation that is before you this evening. And it concerns a late correction by the authors of the evidence which supports the statement of common ground in the housing employment needs assessment document. And it's around the employment land numbers. Unfortunately, that correction was received after the agenda was published, so it wasn't possible to pull that into the cabinet report before it was published, I'm afraid. Nevertheless, what it requires is an adjustment to the text of paragraph 17 of the statement. It is the case that all the local authorities in Leicestershire are taking this step to common ground through their democratic processes, and the timing of that is different for each authority. I think Charlemont is one of the first authorities to bring this before Cabinet. Other local authorities will follow on, and indeed it stretches out across the summer, the governance processes. Now, because we are heading into a hearing session, there isn't really time for us to go away and take a lot of time to review the implications of the changes. We do feel that the changes are necessary, and they don't have any significant bearing on Charlemont. Actually, it's an adjustment which can be accommodated within the oversupply that was mentioned earlier on. So the recommendation to you this evening is that you proceed to consider this item and approve it as set out in existing recommendations, but also that there be a further recommendation that myself, in conjunction with yourself and the lead member, be given delegated authority to consider and agree and sign off future amendments to the statements of common ground, subject to those being non-material to Charlemont, if indeed there are any late amendments that are required for the statement because of other governance arrangements that are happening around Leicestershire. And the reason for that is to ensure that should the need arise, an amendment statement can be signed off by the council without the need to come back to cabinet again, subject to those, as I said, those amendments not being material to the council overall. And I think it's really important that that we do move this forward. We are heading into the hearing sessions in a couple of weeks' time. It's important that we are able to demonstrate to the inspectors that Charlemont is committed to strategic planning in Leicestershire, and that will send out a strong signal in terms of what we're presenting to them. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. So, I'm going to open it up for any questions or debate points. I think one of the questions I'd probably like to confirm, and Councillor Bailey raised in his opening remarks, the point about site allocations. And my understanding is that the unmet need can be accommodated within our existing site allocations because of the permutations and numbers, etc., that have been processed. And I think it would be worthwhile just to make sure that we're minuting that is actually the case. So I'm looking to you, Richard, and also to Carol, to really just sort of confirm our understanding that the allocations that we have at the moment can accommodate the unmet need.
That's right, Leader. We have done an exercise with, through the Local Development Framework Board where we've looked at the existing supply, and it is our view that we can accommodate the additional numbers through the existing site allocations. Obviously, that's subject to inspection by, you know, through the examination hearings, and so. You know, it may be that the inspectors ask us to look at the existing sites we've got on the plan, see if we can sweat them harder. And so we need to be led by them through that process to understand, so that they can understand where we are. But as things stand at the moment, our belief is that we can accommodate it with the existing site allocations in the plan.
Thank you very much, Richard. Thank you very much, Carol. As well, I can see you nodding away. Okay, so opening up to other questions. So. Somebody else did have another question earlier on, I can't remember who it was.
Prosperity, no, biodiversity.
Oh, no, so that's later on in the question. Okay. Shona, you're looking at me.
Only because Richard covered what I was going to ask in his instruction,
right.
So that's all absolutely fine.
Okay, that's fine in that case. I get a little bit worried when somebody looks at me. I thought you were thinking
I was going to ask the questions.
Okay. Are there any other questions? I mean, the paper is pretty straightforward. I know. It's the information is not new to us in the sense that we've discussed it informally to actually understand the background of the paper. So I'm sure members are reasonably happy with the explanation that's been given and also the assurances as well. So if there are no other questions, no other debating points, I'm going to say thank you very much to Carol. You need to talk less, Carol. It's just not good enough. And thank you very much to Richard as well. So I'm going to go back to Councillor Bailey to make a recommendation.
Thank you, Leader. I move that officers' recommendations would reason for the same reason set out on page 31 of the agenda be moved, plus the additional recommendation, which is that the Head of Planning and Regeneration, in conjunction with the Leader of the Council and Lead Member, be given delegated authority to consider, agree and sign off further amendments of the Statement of Common Ground, subject to those being non-material to Charnwood, for the reason to ensure that, should the need arise, an amended Statement of Common Ground can be signed off by the Borough Council without the need for it to be further considered by Cabinet, subject to any amendments not being material to the Borough.
Okay, thank you very much. I have pleasure in seconding that. So, can I see all those in favour? That's everyone. Okay, thank you very much. Council Poland, if you'd been in the room, which way would you have voted?
I would have voted for.
Okay, thank you very much. I should have asked you actually on the previous item 6 as well. I'm assuming since it was your item, you would have been voting for that one as well.
Yeah,
I'd have
probably voted for it.
Okay, that's good to know. Thank you. Thanks a lot for that. Okay, we now move on to item 8, which is the UK Shared Prosperity Fund. So we also still have with us, obviously, Richard, who's our Head of Planning and Regeneration. We also have on screen, it's just appeared, there we go, Chris Grace, who's our Team Leader of Regeneration and Economic Development, to assist with the report. So just really want to sort of run through a few of the sort of key points. I appreciate this is sort of a live item in the sense that there are currently sort of lots of communications out to our partners across the borough in relation to this one. So this is a live process. But we have been allocated £4 million by the UK government to support schemes over the next 3 years as part of a £2.6 billion national programme. The intention is that the £4 million that we've been allocated supports local schemes across the whole of Charnwood. It's not specific to one particular area. The general aim is about levelling up. It's about making communities feel better about themselves. But it is focused also on three key headings. And those, I have to say, are pretty general, and that they cover almost sort of any project type. Likewise, the £4 million allocation is to be spent on a different types of project types, so everything from revenue to capital. We're often restricted to capital expenditure, this funding is not restricted to capital expenditure. I think 90% of it is actually designated as revenue. Obviously, that revenue can also be spent on capital projects as well. So it's a more flexible approach that the government's actually given us. We are currently, as I said, out for discussion with all of our partner organisations across the borough. And we're using this as a way of describing, sort of creating a future Charnwood. So this is about supporting our communities for a better future, hopefully delivering long-term change and improvements to those areas by supporting local groups in their local endeavours, and where needed, we will work with neighbouring authorities as well if there are particular projects that maybe cross between districts and areas across Leicestershire. So Chris Grace is on the screen, has generated a form which has gone out to all those organisations that I mentioned. They're currently, I think, sort of beavering away on filling those items in, and deadline for returns is only a few days away. So look forward to actually seeing some of those as they come back. The funding, as I said, is split over 3 years. A small amount of funding in year one, slightly more in year two, the remaining amounts in year three. So it is exciting. It's a great way of supporting all sorts of different types of projects across the borough. And as they come in, hopefully we'll have a little bit more information about some of them specifically as we go through the approvals process over this summer before money starts being spent towards the end of this year and onwards. So Chris and Richard, is there anything else that you want to add in addition to that?
Yes, thank you, Leader, and I know Chris might want to come in as well. It's just to mention that the recommendations that are there in front of you tonight you know, very much reflect the very small amount of time that we've got to prepare the investment plan for submission to DLUHC by the 1st of August. So there is delegated authority requested for the strategic director in consultation with you, Leader, to set out the priorities and scoring criteria, and also delegated authority to yourself in consultation with the local MPs to approve the final investment plan. That's because the investment plan has to be endorsed by the two MPs before it's submitted. And finally, the delegation to the Chief Executive in consultation with yourself and the 151 officer to submit it to DLUHC in order to access the allocation of funding. So that's the process that we've set out there in order to, because our preference would be to bring the report back to Cabinet, but given the timescales and over the summer period, that's not going to be possible. So that's the reason for those recommendations. So I just wanted to point that out in particular for the reasons that are given in the report. Chris might want to come in and just make a few points. I know that we've had some schemes submitted to us already. I don't know whether Chris wants to update us on that, perhaps just mention the theme which we're going for, which is Future Charnwood, and just mention a few words around that before we make a decision.
Over to you, Chris.
Thank you, Richard, and through the chair, yes, just to update Cabinet with where we're at as things stand this afternoon. So the local emphasis that we put very much on the investment plan that we have to put together is about the next generation residents and businesses across the whole of the Charnwood Borough, and how this fund can potentially help them, support them, improve the environment, the place within which they live. And certainly having more than just one eye on the fact that a number of parts of the community have been severely affected by the pandemic period, and therefore proposals which show how parts of the community can successfully move away from that period into a more prosperous and better environment and state of being is important in terms of the investment plan. The approach that is proposed and has so far been taken here in Charnwood is one of openness and inclusiveness. I think it's fair to say we are probably being more open than a number of other authorities across the country are in terms of our approach to that. And it does mean that there are significant levels of interest in this funding. and therefore I am expecting by the close of this weekend, which is when the deadline is for submission of pro formas, that we will have a substantial number of proposals coming forward, possibly in the region of the 30 to 40. I wouldn't be surprised. And they, the ones that have come in so far, certainly all match with the criteria of the fund, although, as the leader has just pointed out, it is quite broad. But they range from very small community organisations through to parish councils, through to some borough council projects, through to proposals from quite large organisations who are active in the borough. So we're going to have a really interesting mix of proposals, it would appear, and I think gives us a fantastic opportunity to make decisions in due course in conjunction with the leader about what actually gets included in the investment plan. So there's going to be a lot of work to do on that in a tight timeline, but there's no reason why we won't achieve what we need to do, which is to put the investment plan together. And it is worth, fine point from me, it's just worth Cabinet noting that the investment plan does have to follow a template approach which the government has provided for these investment plans. It isn't a case of writing a plan like we did, for example, on the town deal, where the appearance of the plan can be very localised. This is about following a definite approach that government has set for these investment plans.
Okay, thank you very much, Chris. Councillor Rawlings.
Just a quick point. Do we think we're going to have allocated the 4 million or so that we've got, roughly, based on what you've seen so far?
Based on what's come in so far, we're going to be heavily oversubscribed in terms of the amount of money we're asked for. So I've formally lodged 6 projects so far, and that already, if every one of those were to be successful, that already takes us to about £2,300,000. So I think we're going to be heavily oversubscribed.
Okay. So we're going to be making some, we'll be very, very popular to some people and very unpopular to others, I think, but so be it. Right, Councillor Mercer.
Chris, as you recall, I discussed project number 7 with you. Which Councillor Boke and I will be submitting, but just to get a bit of clarification, do we have to be absolutely precise about the amount of money? Because if you recall, the idea, which fitted neatly in with the local pride concept, was very much a sort of how long is a piece of string. Could we say, can we leave those bits a bit vague to say if you lot like the idea, then it would deserve a certain amount of money, or do we have to be spot on precise?
My suggestion, Councillor, is that it doesn't need to be precise in the sense that it has to go down to every single last pound and pence, but it does need to be as accurate as possible, simply because, as we've just touched on, it is going to be a very complex process for making the decisions about what goes in the plan. It's affected not just by the merits of the proposal, but it is affected also by the fact that the release of the money from the government to us is tapered up from year one through to year three. So we don't actually, when I say we, that's the council in terms of managing this fund, won't get just say 50% of it, 53%, I think it is, of the total funding until 2024-2025. So the more accurate the figures that we have from project proposals, the better, because it enables us to do the calculations about how what potentially will be approved fits with the amount of money that we will have in each of the 3 years.
So look out for a very precise proposal in your inbox.
I prefer precise, but it's not essential.
Okay, right. Chris will now be hitting refresh on his email account, I think. Okay, are there any other further questions? Chief Exec, you have a question. You have a statement, don't you?
A point, if I may, please, Leader. Just to say, I think there obviously will be a number of schemes that aren't able to be funded through UK Shared Prosperity Fund, but what we will gather through this exercise is a number of projects which we can put into a pipeline, because we are already trying to develop a pipeline project. So even if we can't fund them now, it'd be useful to get all the intelligence that will come from the 30 or 40 schemes we get in, and then we can look to perhaps theme some of those or look at where we might be able to support parish councils or whoever it is to develop that project and move it forward and perhaps bid for other sources of funding that might be coming through us or could be coming through other venues or avenues like the lottery. So I think that would be quite useful.
Yeah.
And just a point for Councillor Mercer and Councillor Boker, if they are submitting a scheme, it would be really handy if we could have a bit more detail about exactly what impact that might have on officer time before it's submitted. So I imagine there's some work associated with the project. So any details on that would be very gratefully received. Thank you.
Okay. I have now visions of it including a hire of a helicopter and a large bag to throw money over particular parts of Loughborough, but hopefully not. Okay, so are there any other questions or points that anyone wishes to make? No. Right. So, in which case, I am going to make the recommendation, which is to move the officer's recommendation 1 to 5 for reasons given 1 to 5 on page 85. Can I ask Councillor Boker to make the second?
Certainly, with pleasure.
Okay, in that case, that's good. Let's propose the second. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Okay, that's great. Thank you very much. Councillor Poland, which way would you have voted if you had been in the room?
In favour.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chris, and thank you very much, Richard, as well, for that one. Richard, I think you're still with us, aren't you? Because Carol is coming back in again, because we're now on to item 9, which is the biodiversity planning guidance, which I know is a big item for the evening. So we're going to move on to Castle Bailey.
Thank you very much, Leader. It is turning into the Richard Bennett show tonight. So the report seeks to Cabinet's approval to introduce planning guidance for biodiversity. It is an informal planning guidance to be used by the council in its decision-taking process. The guidance does hang off the core strategy policy CS13 and is also closely linked with the local plan or draft local plan policy EV6. I won't get that out without tripping over my own words. It does sort of introduce a guidance to provide a framework for collecting developer contributions through the development management process. If we don't have such policy in place or guidance in place, we do run the risk of losing out on contributions towards enhancing local biodiversity in the area as a result of not having it in place. So it pretty much does what it says on the tin in terms of the report.
Thank you very much. I have to say, it is probably one of those items that is gonna have the most significant effect on discussions with residents over future years, because it's certainly one of the points that often gets raised, which is development makes flooding worse. Well, actually, within our draft local plan, we have accommodation on that, and that we have to have a net improvement on flooding. And the other thing is about plants and sort of destruction of our biodiversity within the borough, and the fact that we now are going to have a policy that actually means that we actually get more rather than less. Again, is a huge plus for the residents. And I genuinely believe this is actually a really, really important paper. So, Richard and Carol, is there anything that you want to add after what's already been said?
Yes, Leader, if I may, and Carol may have some comments as well, but I just wanted to say that Charnwood has been quite forward-thinking around the biodiversity agenda over the last few years. We're very fortunate to have a senior ecologist on the books within the local planning authority. And in our core strategy, we do have this policy, CS13, which seeks to obtain development contributions towards biodiversity loss to seek compensation. And we've been quite successful, actually, in gathering money over the last few years and have quite a lot of money on account to make enhancements to biodiversity in the borough. Government is also keen on biodiversity, and they've been bringing forward proposals for biodiversity net gain through the Environment Act, which members may be aware of. And that has meant that we've had to sort of take stock of the way that we're doing things and make sure that we're in tune and harmony with the government thinking that's come forward through the Act itself. Now, you may recall that we were intending to bring this report to members earlier in the year. It's been deferred twice, and that's because the government published a consultation on how to implement the Environment Act in the very beginning of January through to April. So we thought it would be a good idea to take stock of that consultation before we stuck our necks out in preparing this informal planning guidance. Actually, this guidance is intended to sort of reflect the mood music coming out of the Act and the direction of travel that's taken us all in. And as an interim until the Act is fully implemented, which will be at the end of 2022, November onwards, when we are looking to bring forward a supplementary plan document, a formal planning guidance document, which we've actually signalled in our local development scheme that we will do. So the purpose of this guidance is to bring some certainty to the development industry, that they know what to expect when they're working with the local planning authority to bring forward development, that there will be an expectation about how we go about harnessing contributions for biodiversity and how we will use that money and what receptor sites are on our list that we'll be targeting that money towards. So that's what this is all about. There's a lot more of this to come. There's a lot of work going on across the county and across Leicestershire around this agenda and a desire to perhaps bring forward a supplementary planning document which all districts can adopt as, you know, the same approach basically. So that's something that we're working with partners around as well. So that's probably as much as I would need to say at this point. Okay. Carol, did you want to add anything to that?
Only very briefly to reiterate what you said, Richard, that I think the publication of this document puts us on the front foot of this issue, and certainly adding to that the identification of an initial batch of receptor sites and a methodology for identifying future receptor sites should provide the borough some comfort or a degree of comfort that the future investment in biodiversity is taking place in the borough rather than elsewhere, which is something that could happen, which this guidance seeks to avoid. That's all I wish to add. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I ask one quick question before we go into it? How are we going to publicise where the funds are being spent, where the receptor sites are?
Yeah, so the idea is that we have a dynamic list that's available on the website that people can look at and scrutinise. And obviously the other issue about this is we're collecting money through Section 106, so these monies and sites will be monitored through our quarterly Section 106 working group and scrutinised on an annual basis, as is our current arrangements for the management and monitoring of Section 106 funds.
Because I personally think it is absolutely critical that residents see the net gain that we're describing is there, that they can actually, because otherwise there is a risk that people think that it's just greenwashing, that it's that there aren't really any improvements. We often get comments about 106 in particular that refer to sort of doctors' surgeries, etc., etc. But this is something that will hopefully be under our control, and therefore we can, with a great deal of clarity and communication, set out to people what's actually happening with the money that we're collecting.
That's right, Leader, and I'm just point members' attention to recommendation 4, and that concerns the establishment of a new charge to recover the costs involved in monitoring this biodiversity mitigation. It's important that we are able to identify that the money we've obtained from new development sites is being used to purchase the units of biodiversity enhancement on receptor sites, which correlates with the number of units that was lost on the development site. And overseeing that and being able to demonstrate the linkage between the request and the spend, so to speak.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Councillor Poland.
As you say, it's an interesting item and one that comes up in my pocketbook quite regularly, as you can imagine, representing the REIT villages. In terms of the receptor sites, I think you called them, Richard, are they going to be, are they linked to the development which funds them in a direct way? So what I'm thinking here is, I think it's a great, but I can imagine a situation where development in, say, Cosmington, comes along and they say, right, we're going to lose all these trees because they're building there, but we're going to build some more, we're going to plant some more trees in Shed or something. And we'll go, well, that's not relate that, you know, that we're still living in our trees and we're not gaining anything from that. So is there any plan to sort of effectively compensate areas that lose trees and other sort of biodiversity with equivalent biodiversity somewhere in the local areas there?
Yeah, thank you, Councillor Pollen, through you, Leader. This is a tricky area, this is, because the opportunities to provide compensation as close as possible to the development site, whilst that's an objective we want to try and secure through this guidance, it may not actually be possible, depending on where that site is and the land ownerships and the ability to demonstrate that these improvements, enhancements can be maintained for a 30-year period, which is a requirement of the Act. So what we try to do is to ensure that the development site, any biodiversity that's lost as a consequence of development on the site can be enhanced on the site wherever possible before looking for an off-site contribution as a sort of a second best. And where it is off-site, we're trying to get that as close as possible to the origin, as possible. But it's not always possible, and so that's why we need to have a list of sites which can absorb the contributions as and when they do arise, within the borough, and try to pick the sites that are as close as possible to the originating source of that funding.
Thank you.
Okay, and I'm assuming if it's a 30-year period, the last thing we want is an allocated site to, in year 25, to something government development site itself.
That's right, Leader, and it's a real challenge, actually. I mean, we do need to be able to find sites that we can maintain the enhancement for that 30-year period, and so that brings into play working with partners like the Wildlife Trust, the Chalmers Forest and the Outwoods Trust, and all these various different parties that are established groups that we can work with to create enhancement within those areas, and that they can manage on our behalf going forward. And it may also be the case that we've got land in our own ownership, areas of informal open space that could be enhanced, that because it's in our ownership, we can maintain oversight over that maintenance for that 30-year period, that kind of sort of stewardship going forward.
And I'm assuming if the improvements are within the development area or the development site, that part of the 106 will be a legal agreement that improvements have to stay in place regardless for a minimum of 30 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions? Councillor Burkham.
Thank you, Leader. I had a resident who phoned me only this week because he's about to put in a planning application for 3 bungalows on his land. He seemed to think this new biodiversity net gain guidance would be applicable to him, but I understand that there is a minimum number of houses before this kicks in, shall we say.
Yes, through you, Leader. The advice, planning advice that we've got, says that there's actually a table on page 12 of the advice which sets out when a biodiversity impact assessment will be necessary. It actually takes its lead from the Environment Act, and the Environment Act has very few exceptions, actually. And as things stand at the moment, it's all development, with one or two very minor exceptions, such as perhaps changes of use or householder applications. So it would affect your resident. The table on page 12 says one or more new dwellings would be required to undertake this biodiversity impact assessment. It is really quite far-reaching. And as the government consultation considered. This could be a significant burden on local planning authorities going forward, actually, in assessing all of these impact assessments that are undertaken by, you know, I mean, we have 2,500 applications a year in Charnwood, and, you know, if we're drilling down to virtually every application, then, you know, that's a lot of work for us to process.
Are we going to be helping residents? I mean, taking Castle Boker's resident, who's obviously not probably a housing developer, therefore probably this is going to be the once in a lifetime sort of involvement with our planning team. Are we going to have a section on our planning website that actually guides people as to how to actually produce a suitable impact assessment?
Yes, we can put up model examples of impact assessments on the website, as well as you know, a summary of the planning guidance, you know, the key steps to consider. So there are those FAQs and guidance papers to upload onto the website.
I think that's important because, as the leader has pointed out, a lot of individual developers won't even understand what a BIA is, and could fall into the trap of incurring a lot of expense by going, shall we say, to a consultant, when in fact maybe with a sort of pro forma on the website, they could fill that in themselves along with the planning consultant that they're utilising. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any other questions that anyone has?
Can we add that as a recommendation to the policy?
I don't know about a recommendation, but certainly we can ask Rich and his team to make sure that I mean, you've talked about that it will be, we can have something on the website.
Yes, through you, I think it's a fair point. I mean, the planning guidance seeks to explain our approach and how we're going to do this, but I think it's a fair point that for the layperson, you know, the residents who are wanting to bring forward just one dwelling or something like that, that having some kind of process map or a summary of the guidance, some kind of
if I can ask
examples of pro formas and that sort of
thing. Maybe if I can ask Laura to actually make sure that in the minutes we have a note that Richard set out what we're going to do in response to Councillor Boker's comments. Is that okay, Councillor Boker?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Right. So, back to Councillor Lane.
Thank you, Leader. I move that officer recommendations 1 to 4 for reasons 1 to 4 as set out on agenda page 94 be adopted.
And Councillor Rollins.
Yeah, thank you, Leader. I'm happy to second this item.
Okay, thank you very much. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Thank you very much. Councillor Poland, how would you have voted if you'd been in the room?
Would have voted in favour, Leader.
Thank you very much. Okay, thank you very much, Carol. Thank you very much, Richard, as well. I know, Richard, you're going to be with us for a bit longer. Carol, I think you can probably disappear off at this point if you want to, unless you wish to listen to committee appointments. You're more than welcome to. No, Karen's shaking her head, so maybe not. Okay, look, we're on to item 10, which is the appointments to outside bodies and charitable organisations. We have Karen on the screen in front of us. I'm going to make a very, very brief introduction to this, which is, this is about our annual review and appointment to outside bodies and charitable organisations, as the item explains. Karen, I know you've got some updates for us, so I'm going to go really to you to talk about some of the updates, because I know you've been going through the lists and have identified some organisations that possibly are no longer meeting, and also have been a couple of tweaks on membership of others. So over to you, Karen.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Morgan. So the list, as it is very much the same, but I will highlight the ones where I've established new information. So the first one is Charnwood Action for Fair Trade Steering Group. I've established this hasn't been operating for 2 years now, so I'm going to suggest that is deleted from the list. The other one that hasn't been operating is Charnwood Health and Wellbeing Partnership. I understand the terms of reference of that particular body are being looked at the moment, and a similar body may come forward in the future, but for the time being, I'm also going to suggest that is deleted from the list. The other changes relate to Charnwood Talking News. there is actually a requirement to have two members on that, and it can actually be any member. It doesn't need to be a local ward member. So as well as Councillor Sue Gerrard, it's also suggesting that we appoint Councillor Harper Davis. Then the other final change is regarding the Outwards Management Committee. That unfortunately there was an admin error in that Councillor Smidovitz was missed off the list. There are 8 appoint members on that, and so adding on Councillor Smidovitz. So that's the amendments there, and I just wanted to, as I was been doing a bit of research as well, I just wanted to highlight another couple of things that I'd established. So it was queried about the Groby Quarry Liaison Committee, and I've established that is still operating, and it will be having a meeting shortly now that we've come out of COVID restrictions. I've also established that Equality Action is very much active, and I spoke to the director there only yesterday, and she said that members do receive a newsletter and will be invited to the next AGM in September. And finally, Watermead Action Group, I've also established that is very much an active group as well. So that was all I wanted to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Karen. Can I ask one quick question? I meant to raise this with you, but I'll do it straight away. Local Government Association Mutual, is that still actually in existence? I say that as a former director of it.
I understand that it is. It isn't actually featuring on this list, so I can investigate that for you.
It's on page 131.
Okay.
And I'm down as being an appointment to it. But I'm looking at Adrian, whether Adrian's had any contact with them in the last 12 months. I don't think they're probably in existence anymore, or at least they're not part of the LGA, because I was an LGA approved director and I stood down because it no longer was going to be part of the LGA.
Okay, I can look into that. So we'll keep, if you don't mind, we keep the appointment as it is at the moment, but okay. I will look into it as a post-meeting action. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any other points? Any Councillor Mercer?
Karen, every appointment is a Councillor bar one. It's two questions. One, is there anything restricting us appointing non-councillors to these positions? And secondly, if one of them stands down midway through the year, does it have to come to Cabinet to appoint a replacement?
So in response to your first question, what can indeed happen is non-councillor appointments can be confirmed, and indeed we have in fact done that with one of the charitable organisations, where one of the ex-councillors, we got permission from the charity to continue with an ex-councillor being on that committee, and as long as the outside body or charity is in agreement, then that is appropriate and that can be done. And then your second question about if during the year, if there's any changes or somebody steps down, then Adrian Ward has delegated authority to approve those changes mid-year.
And who would actually make that proposal to replace that person? Would that come from the leader?
So what the process would be, that I would be advised by a councillor that they've stepped down from an outside body or a charitable trust. I will then ask, if depending on which member, I would go to the group whip and the leader to ask who the replacement would be, and then I would have a delegated decision drawn up for Adrian to sign off. So the leader would be involved in that decision, and along with the group whips, if appropriate.
Brilliant.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions or points anyone wants to raise? No? Okay, thank you very much, Karen. I'm going to move recommendations 1 to 3 for reasons 1 to 3 on page 126 to include the amendments as set out as described by Karen during that presentation. Can I ask Councillor Mercer whether you would like to second?
Yes,
I will happily second that email.
Okay, thank you very much. So can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone in favour. Okay, thank you very much, and thank you very much, Karen. So, we're now on to the exempt item. I know Councillor Ransom's been eagerly waiting for this item. It's almost there, Councillor Ransom. So, I'm going to propose to exclude members of the public.
Yeah.
I'm very, very sorry,
that's all right.
You're now going to be formally excluded. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
So, proposing to exclude members of the public meeting during the consideration of the following items on the grounds that it would involve the likely disclosure of exempt information as defined in paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 12.A to the Local Government Act 1972, and it is considered that the public interest in maintaining the exemption outweighs the public interest in disclosing information. Councillor Barclay, would you like to second that?
I second that, please.
Can I see all of those in favour? Thank you very much. That's everyone in favour.